This is the Secret Life of Mold podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special edition, the Texas Takeover edition of the Secret Life of Mold podcast. I'm your guest host, Mike Marshall, Chief Operating Officer with Mold Inspection Sciences Texas, coming to you live out of Austin, Texas. Today's topic is asbestos myths and facts. And for this topic, we brought in two of our many asbestos experts we have on staff here at Mold Inspection Sciences, Ben Blaze and Philip Chime. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Excellent, excellent. Thanks for taking some time to join us today. So I figured we'd start with a little bit of an introduction to you both. Ben, why don't you start us off? Give us a little bit of history, your expertise, and some of your background.
Absolutely. I'll start by saying thanks for having me. I've seen the show, super excited to be here. I've seen all the other experts you've had on the show, so I feel honored. A little bit about me. I am a licensed asbestos inspector. I'm also a mold assessment consultant, senior project manager here with Mold Inspection Sciences. Been with the company for about 8 years now and assisted with managing asbestos abatement projects for about six of those. I graduated North Carolina State University with a bachelor's in biological sciences and been in the indoor environmental industry out of college.
Awesome. Great. Thanks, Ben. And Philip, I just got to say, I love the mask. I love it. We all love the mask. You know.
Thank you.
Philip, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, first of all, let's not gloss over Ben Blaze's name. I love your name, Ben Blaze. That is an awesome name, by the way. Anyway, let me take off this mask so you guys can hear me a little bit better. I wear the mask because I like going up to clients' homes and they see my mask and they just start laughing and it literally calms down everybody. It makes my job a whole lot easier. So I love the mask. Anyway,
it's great.
I am so happy to be here. This is actually my first ever one of these. I've watched a ton of your shows. They're awesome.
Thank you.
So let me explain exactly who I am. My name is Philip Chime. I have and Chime, let me spell my last name, is C-H-I-M-E, but it's pronounced Chime. Anyway, so I started in this industry in 2002. I was first a project manager and air monitoring technician for a company that hired me right after I got my license in 2002. And a little bit after that, they basically trained me to go get my asbestos inspector license, which I did. It was almost 2003. So I've been doing that for quite a long time. I have my contractor supervisor license as well as my asbestos air monitoring license, as well as my inspector license. And now, recently, as of 5 years ago, I got my mold assessments consultant license. That's pretty much the gist of what I do. I also have something called a NIOSH 582 license. And that's basically so I can read any type of air samples that I collect on site during an abatement project. But again, I've been with the industry since 2002.
Awesome. Great. Well, for our thousands of fans across the nation, you can see why we brought Ben and Philip on for this podcast. They are two, like I said, of our many asbestos experts we have on staff here at Mold Inspection Sciences. So we're super excited to have you guys share some information with us.
Thank you.
For the people that are out there who may not know exactly what asbestos is, why don't we go through just a quick history and definition of what exactly is asbestos?
Sure. Yeah, I can kick that off. Yeah, so asbestos is a naturally occurring mineral, and it was in its mined, which I think that's a fact not many people know. But asbestos, there's a number of asbestos type minerals, and they are mixed in and used in building materials, which is why we test for them. But asbestos is actually a very good component of, or can be, of building materials. It's an insulator. Fire retardant, when it's mixed in with products, papers and cement and other plastics, it's a structural component. So it can make those materials stronger.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I can go into a little bit more detail on that. So, you know, I want you to imagine asbestos, the way it's mined, it's a rock. So you look at it and it literally looks like a rock. But then when you start using your microscope to actually get into it, you'll notice that it's a bunch of tiny little fibers compressed into that rock. So when they mine it, they literally remove portions of it And then they start separating it, and that's when they start adding it and mixing it into other materials to make it stronger, to make it basically indestructible. Literally, with asbestos, you can't burn asbestos, you cannot dissolve asbestos. Asbestos lasts for a lifetime, and that's literally why it's a dangerous property at the end of the day.
Very interesting. Yeah, I learned some things right there as well, so thank you for that. So why don't we talk a little bit about the history of when and why we started using, I think you guys have touched on it a little bit already, but the whys of why we started using asbestos in building materials and other materials. When did that all start, and why did that start happening?
Sure. Yeah, Philip, you can piggyback off what I say, but
sure.
Yeah, so asbestos use started, you know, in the 1800s, and it was mined, like Philip said, it was mixed in with building materials and used throughout the U.S. and throughout the world because of its good properties in building materials. And it wasn't until the 1970s when we started catching on to the potential health impact that it was having on, of course, the workers in a number of industries. And I think one common misconception amongst most people is that asbestos is still used. Obviously, it's very regulated now. There's a lot of strict regulations that govern asbestos, but it currently still is used in a lot of building materials and brake pads. So it's still being produced, still being imported. It is not completely banned in the U.S.
Right. Well, it's supposed to be, technically, it was banned in 1989. That's when they said, okay, we need to stop using asbestos. But at the end of the day, just like Ben said, you know, we're still importing a lot of goods that has asbestos-containing materials in them. You can literally go to Home Depot and still find these products on the shelves. Literally, it's supposed to be listed. So what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to list on the ingredients that there's asbestos and also the percentage of the asbestos. But a lot of times, because of the importing of asbestos, they don't do that. So that's why we have to still do asbestos testing in any material. I don't care how new the material is. Let me tell a quick story about this particular incident that happened in Atlanta, Georgia, once we did this really big building. So we were walking around with, I think, the mechanical engineer people, and they kept pointing out to us what was new and what was old. And I told him, I said, well, it doesn't really matter if the product is new. We still have to sample it. And he said, well, we just got a bunch of this product from Home Depot and we rebuilt everything. I said, well, at the end of the day, you know, they can still import asbestos. And he literally didn't believe me, but he allowed me to do the sampling. One in particular was a white mastic, HVAC mastic that they call it, that they use where the ductwork meets the HVAC unit, and they use the mastic to close off any type of gaps or any type of creases. Mm. Well, we generally always sample that. And sure enough, when I sampled it, 3 days later, we came back with the results, and it had 3% chrysotile asbestos. And this was brand new material that these people got from Home Depot. And they had to actually abate that system. They had to literally abate all that again after they put in new material. So again, it doesn't matter how new it is. It doesn't matter the fact that we've actually banned it here in the United States. At the end of the day, we always have to do inspecting. We always have to test any material that potentially could contain asbestos.
Sure. Great story. So I think the biggest takeaway from that little segment there is consumer beware, because although it's banned and it's supposed to be not in the United States, but we should still be checking all those labels of building materials and make sure we're not putting asbestos into our homes. So thank you for that. So speaking of the health issues, when and why can asbestos become a hazard? And what are some of the possible health impacts? Why is it banned and why is it bad to have inside of buildings?
The thing with asbestos is we're really not too concerned about the asbestos that we can see. If we can see it, that's not the ones that can get into our lungs. So there's a size and length that they want. Okay. And that size and length is usually what we can't see with the naked eyes. I'm going to talk about friable asbestos and non-friable asbestos. First, I'm going to explain to you what friable is. So friable is literally when you can take a material and then crumple it with hand pressure. Once you crumple it, it becomes airborne. And once it becomes airborne, that tiny little asbestos fibers I was talking about, the ones we can't see, is the problem. Now, I'm going to try to see if I can show you guys a way that they showed us in training class. And it's going to be kind of rudimentary, okay? But once we start inhaling these little tiny asbestos fibers, they go, the first line of defense is supposed to be our nose. So our nose and those little hair follicles in our nose capture as much of the asbestos fibers, literally the ones you can see. Mm-hmm. But then there's the little tiny ones you can't see that'll bypass all that, and it'll get into our lungs. Once it gets into our lungs, let's imagine that this is our lung. Again, this is a rudimentary lung here, guys. And once we inhale it, now, this literally takes about 20 to 30 years, and it takes a long period of time because now that asbestos that we can't see is trying to migrate its way through our lungs. So again, here's our lungs. And of course, you can't see the fiber, but let's assume my little tiny finger is an asbestos fiber. So when you inhale it into your lungs, in about 30 years or 20 to 30 years, slowly but surely, that asbestos fiber starts poking its tiny little head through your, if you can see my little finger, okay? It starts poking its tiny little head through your lungs. So there's a couple of things that happens when it does that. So as soon as that tiny little particle pokes its head out, now your defense mechanism inside your body, I believe your white blood cells, they recognize this and they say, oh my God, it's a foreign invader coming that we don't understand what it is. So the white blood cells attack this strange little tiny fiber that's poking its head out. It shoots its little tiny chemicals into it, hoping to dissolve it. But of course, asbestos, you can't dissolve it. So every time they do that, it leaves a tiny little scar tissue in that area. Now repeat this process thousands of times, thousands of times. White blood cells shoots its little enzymes, trying to dissolve it. Eventually, you'll start getting a scar tissue right there at that point where that asbestos fiber has poked its head out. That when that scar tissue gets large enough, it then starts affecting your breathing capacity and your lungs. This is called asbestosis. So when that happens, your lungs become stiff. And instead of it inflating and acting like a balloon, it's now stiff and it's hard to inflate itself. That can lead to a multitude of health problems. Now, that's just one fiber. Throughout your lungs, you're going to get other fibers coming out. And then before you know it, now you have a serious issue. Mm-hmm. Mesothelioma is the worst. Asbestosis might be the least. But at the end of the day, those fibers will affect your health.
Great, great information. Ben, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, a couple of the big points that you mentioned, the friable and non-friable asbestos. Obviously, the friable asbestos is the type of material that you can more easily be exposed to, where the fibers can be released easier than the non-friable materials, which is like VCT tile, floor tile. It's sturdy. It's very difficult for those fibers to be released, of course, until materials are torn up and damaged.
I'm sorry, I better cut you off. I should have explained a little bit more about fibrous and non-fibrous materials. So again, fibrous, when you crumple it up and it gets airborne, we're talking about things like there's some texture that'll do that, but most importantly, things like fireproofing, they're sprayed on fireproofing. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this in your elementary school many years ago. So you walk through the hall and you look up and you see this type of insulation that's on your ceiling. It's not actually ceiling, it's a soft material. Usually what we would do as elementary school kids, we will take a pencil and we'll flick it up into the ceiling and it'll stick. And we'll be like, wow, look at that. But my God, that's like a lot of asbestos. And that's, again, what we call friable. If you take that pencil and kind of scrape on that ceiling, all that stuff turns into dust or fibers and it'll all float in the air. Mm-hmm. So that's friable. Now, non-friable are things that you simply cannot basically crumple with your hand. You got floor tiles, sheetrock, caulking. Those type of materials, you need other means in order to make them airborne. You have to now start sanding them. You have to now start cutting them. Once you start doing that, then of course those can get airborne, but that's what we call non-friable. So the non-friable material is not as concerning as the friable material because it takes a longer time in order to make those go airborne than it would like your friable sprayed on fireproofing. Go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry.
No, no, that's perfect. Yeah, another thing I'll touch on, one of your good points was the long latency period with health impacts from asbestos. So unlike maybe from exposure to other environmental hazards like mold, with asbestos, it's difficult to know that you are exposed until decades later, potentially, when you have developed those health impacts. So part of our surveys, our asbestos surveys, which, you know, I'm sure we'll touch on later, is we're identifying where the friable and non-friable materials are. And then, of course, we'll test them so you at least know what you have present in your home. Now, again, like Philip said, asbestos is a good building material. The big concern is when they're disturbed, or if they're friable and disturbed, is when it can create a health hazard.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Ben, to talk about that, when it's disturbed. So a lot of people think, okay, my God, I got asbestos in my home. Yeah, sure, you have asbestos in your home, but if you're not doing anything to it, you don't have anything to worry about. Asbestos only gets worrisome or starts affecting your health when we start cutting into it, when we start hitting it, moving it around, sanding, grinding, when we literally start to disturb it. And that's why the friable and the non-friable is important, because if it's friable, I mean, just touching it will make it airborne. But things like sheetrock in your home, you know, you don't have to worry about until you start cutting into the sheetrock, then you have to worry about it. So as long as it's not disturbed, literally that material can sit there for centuries, all right? As long as it's not disturbed, then you don't have to worry about any type of health hazard associated with that asbestos.
Exactly.
Great, great info. I see a bunch of questions coming in from our fans. One of the questions, I think we just answered it, just wanted to make sure that, thank Carrie for his question. Can you explain how and when you can be exposed to asbestos? And I think you guys answered that perfectly, but I just want to thank Carrie for the question. It's basically a disturbance of those friable materials, whatever that is, can aerosolize or make those particles and fibers airborne. And that's when you have that inhalation risk.
Yeah, let's be clear, Mike, regardless if it's friable or non-friable, friable just makes it a lot easier to go airborne. And then if it's non-friable, again, if you start disturbing it, if you start, like if you have a renovation in your house and you think you need to tear out the sheetrock, or you think you need to remove the floor tiles that has asbestos in it, those are non-friable material. But once you start removing it, once you start breaking it apart, once you start cutting into it, then it can potentially become airborne.
That's right.
Great information. So let's move along and talk a little bit about what we do from an inspection standpoint. And let's define and talk about what is abatement. I hear that word a lot when you think about asbestos. You know, let's talk about that inspection piece and then what actually is abatement. Ben, why don't you lead us off with that one?
Sure, sure. Before you can move to abatement activities, you first, of course, need to determine if you have asbestos-containing materials present. So at Mold Inspection Sciences, we have, like Mike said, a number of asbestos professionals, from inspectors to asbestos consultants. As Philip mentioned initially when he was given his introduction, there's a series of licenses that asbestos providers can obtain. So at Mold Inspection Sciences, we have a number of asbestos inspectors, and we can come out and perform what's called an asbestos survey, whether that's for your single family home or for your commercial property. Obviously, if you're a contractor and need to pull permits, the asbestos surveys will be a requirement for you to provide to pull those permits for renovations or demolition. With our asbestos surveys, we do a walkthrough of your property, whatever that is. And we're looking for materials, what we call suspect asbestos containing material. Ultimately, what that means is it's a material that could contain asbestos. And so the only way to identify asbestos within that material is to sample that material. And with sampling, yeah, go ahead, Philip.
Let me add on, Ben. When we're inspecting for asbestos, there's just a few things that we do not even consider a sampling. For example, glass, metal, sometimes concrete, depending, wool insulation, fiberglass insulation. So things like that, we know there's not going to be any asbestos, wood, okay? But then anything after that, especially if you don't understand if it could potentially have asbestos, you sample it. So materials, sheetrock, texture, floor tile, caulking, roofing material, insulation, pipe insulation. I can go on and on. Again, if it's glass, don't sample it. If it's brick, you don't sample it. But incredibly, there's a mall that we did in Brownsville. They had brick, and we don't sample brick. But what we do in order to find out if after that break, if in between the break or even the CMU, if there is what we call a moisture barrier or a vapor barrier, it's literally black mastic. And black mastic contains asbestos fibers in it to make it fireproof, to make it strong, etc. So we like to use our sledgehammers to go through that brick to see if it's possible that there's some type of mastic in between the brick and then the interior walls. Mm-hmm. So what we found, and this was very strange, I had never seen this before in all my years of asbestos inspecting, but once we started breaking through the brick, inside of the brick itself, not on the other side of the brick, but inside of the brick were vermiculite. Now, we're going to talk about vermiculite a little bit later, but vermiculite is a type of asbestos material that they use for insulation. I have never seen that before. It absolutely made no sense that there were vermiculite inside of brick, but that's how they constructed this. I think that that mall was probably built in the 50s or the 60s. So that was right, you know, that was when asbestos was going strong. But for it to have it inside, and I want you to imagine individual brick, those individual brick. Once we broke the brick apart, it just started flowing out. And every single brick, and the brick went up to probably 20 feet all the way up in the air that surrounded the whole entire mall. So they literally had to have all that abated. There was vermiculite, asbestos-containing material inside of brick. So anytime I see brick now, I always like to, especially if it's a demolition, and only in a demolition will we start tearing up the exterior walls. But once I see brick, I always use my sledgehammer just because of something that I found many years ago that I thought never could happen. But there were asbestos containing material inside of brick. Amazing.
Yeah, that's surprising. It can be shocking sometimes what you'll see when you're out in the field and performing these surveys. But a good point that Philip made in going into the demolition, the surveys can be specific to your needs, right? Similar to our mold inspections where you come to us with concerns and we're going to provide the services that most fit your needs or that's going to give you the answers you're looking for. So you might just be renovating a bathroom at your property. And so we can just survey that bathroom. The assessment Philip was mentioning about the mall, that's a demolition job, which means that exterior walls, roofing, everything composed of that building needs to be surveyed and potentially tested if it could be asbestos containing. So with the survey, we walk the property, we're looking for the suspect asbestos containing material, and we collect physical samples and send it off to a licensed laboratory for analysis.
Now, let me add on to that, Ben. When we collect these physical samples, we have to collect 3 samples per material. And the reason they do that is one of those samples out of the 3, if it has asbestos, then the whole entire material has asbestos. In order to say that it doesn't have asbestos, all 3 samples now have to say not asbestos. That's the only way we can confirm that that material doesn't have asbestos. And when we're collecting that material, we have to collect it from 3 different areas. So let's assume that we walk into a room, let's say a kitchen, and we're looking at wall texture. And that wall texture is in the kitchen, and the same wall texture is in the bathroom. So we call these 2 areas homogeneous because they are exactly the same type of material. So what we now have to do is we now have to take, because there's 2 areas, we should take 2 samples from one area and then one other sample from that other area. Let's assume it's 3 areas, that makes it even better. So it's the kitchen, living room, and bathroom. And they're all homogeneous because they all have that same material, that same type of texture. So I'll take 1 sample from the living room, 1 sample from the kitchen, and 1 sample from the bathroom. And then once, if any of those samples come back with asbestos, let's just assume 1, and those other 2 samples did not, that means that all 3 areas, basically that those 3 areas have asbestos. In order to say that those 3 areas don't have asbestos, then all 3 samples we collected in those areas have to say not asbestos. And then we could definitely say that that material doesn't contain asbestos. I'm sorry, Ben, go ahead.
No, this is good. This is good information. And yeah, the reason for the multiple sampling is because, like we spoke about earlier, the composition of the material, you know, asbestos can be mixed in with building materials. So the amount of asbestos can vary in the various locations. So our sampling is supposed to be random, again, for the materials that appear to look the same where we're testing. So we send the samples off to the lab. They provide us results on the asbestos content. Whether it's non-detect, no asbestos was detected, and it can go up from there. You know, most asbestos-containing material is likely going to be 6% or less, but there are products that have even a higher concentration of asbestos, a lot of pipe insulation. Philip, you can probably name others. But what Mike has pulled up on the screen here, this is our asbestos survey report. So this is what we deliver to all of our clients. It has obviously colored photographs to show and depict the type of material that we sampled, where we label, of course, the sample numbers. If asbestos is detected, we do provide a floor plan or a diagram of the structure to show where those asbestos-containing materials are, and of course, provide the laboratory data as well. With commercial properties, if materials are going to be removed through renovation or demolition and asbestos is detected in building materials, that's where we're getting into abatement now. And this leads to some other steps. So at Mold Inspection Sciences, again, I mentioned we have a series, we have various asbestos inspectors through to consultants, and each of those licensed individuals have different responsibilities. So at Mold Inspection Sciences, we do not perform asbestos abatement. We do not do the removal. However, we do and have to be involved in an abatement project that would involve a commercial structure. We can help manage the abatement projects. Like Philip, he's an air monitor project manager. He can analyze asbestos samples. To start, it can be a long process, but to start, once asbestos is identified and abatement is necessary, a consultant, asbestos consultant, can write what's called an asbestos specification. And what a specification is the outline of how the asbestos needs to be removed, where they need to place containments, how much material needs to be removed, the locations, and that specification gets provided to a licensed abatement contractor, which is separate to Mold Inspection Sciences, that carries out the asbestos removal. For commercial properties as well, what also has to be involved, and we participate in this, is on-site air monitoring. And that's something that Philip does, and he can add to that as well. But unlike mold, where you might come in after the mold is removed to inspect and test to make sure it was successful, with asbestos, you have to monitor the airborne levels throughout the abatement project and also at the end of the abatement project. So with asbestos, we assist from beginning to end and do have to be involved in commercial abatement projects from start to finish.
Yeah, very, 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 very important. And how asbestos differs from mold. So asbestos is very dangerous. At the end of the day, when the project manager, and that's what I do once I get out to the abatement site, I'm now the project manager over that site. My job is literally to make sure that, number one, that they remove the asbestos we told them to remove completely. Number two, that they're not releasing any of the asbestos fibers outside of the containment. So the way I monitor this is basically through my air monitoring. I have an air monitor's license, and that just gives me the authority now to collect air samples throughout the duration of this project. I have to collect air samples outside of the containment. I have to collect air samples inside of the containment. I have to collect air samples where the HEPA filter is set up to make sure that whatever they're doing inside is literally cleaned or purified with the HEPA filter that they have established inside of that containment. So I'm literally taking an air sample right outside of where that air filter is to make sure that all asbestos that is inside that containment is literally getting filtered so it doesn't come outside of that containment. And most importantly also, I have to collect air samples on the personnel removing the asbestos fibers. Once we do that, after everything is complete, now my job is to now go back inside of the containment with the supervisor of the abatement company. And now we're going to walk that containment. We're walking that containment to make sure that everything is spick and span. When I say spick and span, we literally put on white gloves and we walk around with the white gloves and we touch walls and we touch floors because it's up to that abatement company to make sure that that containment has absolutely no debris, no dust, no asbestos fibers. When I walk in, I'm looking for all that. I'm using my white glove. I'm wiping the walls. I'm looking at my hands. If I see any dust particles on my walls, then I fail the containment. And I tell them, hey, guys, you still have to re-clean. So then I leave the containment. I have them continue while I still collect air samples. When they're done again, then I come back in and I repeat this process, looking for any residue, looking for any bits of material that they might have missed. And this is a meticulous inspection. So if I don't find any of that, then visually I cannot clear the containment, but the containment is not clear. What I have to do now, and after everyone leaves the containment, is now I have to set up three pumps inside of that containment because I have to now collect three cassettes. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm taking cassettes with an air pump and I'm sucking air into that cassette. The cassette has a filter inside of it. Once I collect those three air samples and I collect them for 90 minutes, I did for 15, we set it at 15 liters per minute. So we're collecting everything for about 90 minutes. We're trying to pull 1,250 liters. Once we do that, now with my other license, which is called the NIOSH 582, which gives me the authority to now read those samples on site. I have a microscope on site. So I take the cassettes, it's a small little cassette. I open up the cassette, and then in that cassette, there's a round filter. I take that round filter and I take a knife and I cut a little tiny, it's almost like a triangle shape out of that. I put that underneath my microscope and then I read it. What I'm reading for is I'm reading for anything, and this is where it kind of gets a little tricky. So I'm reading anything that looks like asbestos fibers. So it doesn't even have to be asbestos. It has to be the same as an asbestos fiber. It has to be the same width of an asbestos fiber. It could be a cotton fiber. It could be fiberglass fiber. It doesn't matter. With that microscope that they allow us to use on site, we're just supposed to read anything that resembles asbestos. Once I read it and I calculate it and do all my calculations, I'm trying to get 0.01% of asbestos fiber per cubic fiber inside of that containment. Because anywhere in the world, you're going to get less than 0.01% of asbestos fibers. I don't care if you're up in the sky. I don't care if you're in China. I don't care if you're in Africa. Anywhere in the world, there's always a small percentage of asbestos fiber. So they allow that. They allow 0.01%, and that's what I'm looking for. Anything greater than that, then they fail that containment and they have to go inside of that containment and re-clean. Anything less than that, then I tell them, hey guys, congratulations, you've now passed that containment. And once I tell them that, now they can actually start tearing down. That means removing all the plastic, removing all their work equipment, removing the decon, cleaning up as much as possible, and then leaving that area basically against spick and span, spot free. There's no paper, there's no trash, there's no debris. Once they do all that, then now they can have whoever the general contractor is now basically build back that area where they did all that removal. And that's the gist of an abatement.
A lot to that.
Excellent. Now, you've kind of walked us through the initial inspection, the abatement, and now the clearance process for commercial properties. But I know that commercial properties and residential properties differ when it comes to asbestos. So can you guys walk us through a little bit of what the inspection looks like for single family homes and residences, and how does that differ from what we do from a commercial inspection, abatement, and clearance?
Well, let me start on that. Let's be clear. There's absolutely no difference in a commercial property inspection as well as a residential home inspection. We're looking for any material that can contain asbestos. Very simple. Once we find it, though, now it's different for residential homes. Residential homes are not required to remove asbestos like commercial buildings. Commercial buildings are required to have an abatement. Single family homes are not required to have an abatement. They could if they chose to, but at the end of the day, they could literally remove the asbestos any way they want to. They don't have to wear any type of suits. They don't have to wear any type of respirators. They could remove it and then toss it outside and let the garbage people come outside and pick up that asbestos. I think that's a bit crazy, but that's the rules. The rules are it only applies to commercial buildings as well as schools, churches, etc. But if it's a single family home, it's not a requirement there. The only way it's required for a single family home is if a business buys those single family homes and now they're trying to turn that single family home into some type of commercial property. Then once they do that, depending on how many properties, I believe it's four. If it's less than four properties, don't correct me if I'm wrong, man. If it's less than four properties, they don't need to do any type of abatement. But if it's greater than four, then that's when they actually have to have it abated.
Correct. Yeah, four units. Yeah.
Interesting. So outside of the regulations and the rules, what would you say your professional opinion on someone who does get a reading that they do have asbestos in their home and they do want it removed? What's your professional opinion on that?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still asbestos. At the end of the day, if you remove it the wrong way, it still has a potential to kill you. So as an inspector, as a project manager, I would beg homeowners and, you know, anybody who has a home, if you find asbestos in your home, why are you removing it on your own? I mean, are you a licensed abatement company? Are you a licensed asbestos worker? You're none of that. You don't know the right ways to do it. And once you start removing it, heck, you might think it's no big deal today, but then we fast forward the future 20 or 30 years from now, and you start coughing and having issues breathing and you have no idea why. Maybe it's because you removed all that asbestos out of your house on your own without having it professionally done. I'm just saying.
And I'll say as well, you know, part of our job as consultants, you know, indoor environmental professionals, we're here to guide you through these processes. So we let you know what your options are. And then ultimately the decision is, you know, up to you. We will explain what regulations are in place, why they're in place, and give you our opinion on what we feel the best route is. So, you know, there are cases with asbestos where asbestos is identified that you don't have to remove it. There's ways to encapsulate it. Again, as we've touched on a couple times, that asbestos is a good building component. Obviously, there's a health risk when they're damaged, but you can have asbestos present. Say it is a certain type of floor tile that we've touched on. When we do our surveys, we're looking for multiple flooring layers. There's plenty of homes, plenty of businesses that decide they don't want to remove that lower flooring layer and decide to add more glue, add more flooring. So, Philip, you can speak about this, I'm sure, but I've done surveys where there's 5-6 layers of flooring material because they didn't want to go through the abatement project, which they don't have to in many cases, and they've added those flooring layers. So it doesn't always mean that if we identify asbestos that you're stuck going through the abatement process. As Philip said, for single family homes, it's your choice. Having a professional licensed abatement company involved do the removal safely is obviously the best bet and the safest route to take. But yeah, for single family homes, it's your home and you can do what you want with it.
Yeah, it's not just single family homes that do this. So whenever I inspect even commercial properties, so a lot of times what they try to do is they try to take the cheapest route to removal of asbestos. So if you don't have to remove it, why bother? So here's an example. So you have floor tiles, right? And you want to put new floor tiles down. So why are you removing the old floor tile? Why not just take the new floor tiles and put it on top of the old floor tile? I have seen this multiple times. So when we go out to inspect, whenever I'm taking samples of floor tiles, I'm digging into that floor tiles because I'm now trying to find the concrete, cement, whatever is underneath. If it's wood, I'm trying to get all the way down to the substrate because I have seen floors that are packed up with 5 layers of some type of tile, from sheet flooring to floor tile. Then on top of that will be sheet flooring, so and so. So when we collect that sample, we have to remove every single last layer and take that last layer. Some might be asbestos, some might not. Okay, in homes, the same exact thing. When I'm doing an inspection in a home and I come into a bathroom and I notice that the bathroom has sheet flooring. Well, sure enough, when I go underneath the sheet flooring, there's floor tile. And after that, there's more sheet flooring and so on because, you know, typical what people will do instead of spending a whole lot of money to have it abated, they'll just put new material on top of that, which is absolutely fine. Because you're not disturbing the material. You're just putting material on top of material, which locks that material in. So you don't have any type of accidents that might happen where now that material will become some, you know, friable or airborne or them trying to remove it. Because literally, they're just putting floor tile on top of floor tile.
Got it. So to summarize, and I hear you, I think that's exactly what happened in my house that I purchased here in Texas. Because every time I walk in, I feel a little bit taller.
So yes.
I must have stacked it up there. So yes. To summarize, for residential homes who may feel like they have an asbestos issue or they're not really sure the best thing to do, call Mold Inspection Sciences, have one of our asbestos experts come out, take a look at it, and we can give you the steps to take and at least identify what's happening and have you remove or start to remove that material in a safe manner. I think that's kind of summarizes that. But before we move on here to the next piece, we did pull up some photos here I wanted to share, and maybe we could walk through our viewers here on Facebook Live. Thanks for joining us, by the way. Some of these photos that we have, just different asbestos-containing materials, and maybe you could give like a brief description of what we're looking at and, you know, the dangers. I guess just a brief description of what we're looking at here. So here's our first one.
Yeah, so this is flooring, and you can see that they're actually, we were discussing multiple flooring layers. It appears to me like this is the yellowish coloring would be the slab, and you can see the black colorations, which is likely the mastic or the glue used for the floor tile.
Hey, Ben, let's talk about that for just a second. So with floor tiles, all right, so there's two different main types of floor tiles. There's 9x9 floor tiles, and then there's 12x12 floor tiles. 9x9s are usually almost always going to contain asbestos. 9x9s are old floor tiles that they made a long time ago. They don't make 9x9s anymore. They now make 12x12s. So 12x12s usually won't have asbestos. Even the 9x9s, as well as the 12x12s, what we're looking for, most importantly, obviously, we're looking for the floor tiles as well. But generally, where that asbestos is going to be in that mastic or the black mastic. That's literally the glue that holds that floor tile together. They use asbestos fibers in that because that's what makes that glue incredibly strong. So whenever we see that black mastic, it's a red flag. Black mastic, probably about 90% of it will come back asbestos. Floor tiles, 12x12s, maybe 5% of the 12x12s. 9x9s, about 90% of those 9x9s will come back with asbestos. With the linoleum, or what's on top of that, or what we call sheet flooring, it's a thin layer of flooring material. Where the asbestos usually is going to be on that is going to be on the mastic also. It's not black mastic. It's some type of glue that holds that sheet flooring down onto the floor. That's generally where we're going to get that asbestos fibers. But sometimes we'll also get it on that sheet flooring. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, and this flooring, you know, would be an example, a good example of a non-friable material. Can't be crushed with your hands or your fingers. Philip might be able to do that, but most people won't be able to crush it with their fingers. But yeah, this is a good example, something to look for. Yeah, this is something Philip touched on earlier. I think in his first example and first story was, this is HVAC duct lines, I believe, and it is duct sealing. So tape and a sealant applied to the exterior of the ducts and a duct connection. So this is something we definitely look for and test for in our surveys. This is what Philip mentioned, that when he was talking with the contractor initially on that first job, I think he spoke about what that contractor was very sure would not contain asbestos because it was brand new.
Right.
Touch briefly, guys, on, you know, something like this, you run across this, you're on an inspection, you recommend that you take a sample. What precautions are you guys taking as an inspector to make sure that you're not inhaling any of that during the collection of those samples?
So, okay, number one, we don't recommend samples on asbestos materials. We have to collect those samples. It's like, here's the material. If we're doing a full inspection or if we're doing a limited inspection in that area, if this material is there, we have to sample. So,
I'll jump in. Or it's assumed to be asbestos.
Or it's assumed to be asbestos. Absolutely.
Asbestos. Yeah. Part of it is asbestos. Yeah.
Now, sampling something like this and how we do it the safe way. So, yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good question, Mike. So it's kind of tricky. Like, for example, if I go into a building, right, and it has a bunch of workers there, if I come into that building and I'm all dressed up in my PPEs, my personal protective equipment with my mask on, mm-hmm. and they watch me collect this sample, everybody is going to freak out. They're going to be like, oh my God, what's happening? Do I have to leave this environment? So we don't do that. That's what we're supposed to do realistically. But at the end of the day, we really won't do that. So there are other means to collect asbestos samples without making anything go airborne, because at the end of the day, we have to cut into it. So what we do is we take a spray bottle. There's something called wet methods. So wet methods is to suppress fibers that has gone airborne. Whenever you're doing an abatement, the number one thing that you use during an abatement is water. You use mist and sprays of water while you're removing asbestos, because when fibrous materials goes up in the air, when you spray water, mist of water, that material gets captured by the water and then basically traps it and then suppresses it and takes it back down. So we use what we call wet methods. So that's the same thing that we would do during the collection of an asbestos fiber. I'll take a bottle with me, a spray bottle. So as I'm cutting into that fiber, I'm not spraying it completely to make it damp, but as I'm cutting, I'm spraying. Cut, spray, because I'm trying to minimize any bit of that fiber going airborne. Again, that's the method that they use for abatement. So that's the same type of process we will use trying to collect an asbestos fiber or an asbestos material. Once we collect it, we use a tiny little bag, a plastic bag, and then we use either some type of utensil, sometimes even our fingers, sometimes the knife that we're cutting it with. And once we collect it, we put it into that baggie, and then we take the spray bottle again and we spray at least one time there, then we seal it. So once you're looking at that bag, you should see a little bit of dampness in it. That's just letting anyone know who gets this bag that they have used wet methods to suppress any type of airborne fiber that may be inside of that bag. Once it gets into the lab, then the lab opens it up and takes out that material so they can actually read it.
Great explanation. Thank you for that.
Sure.
All right. What's where we have next here?
Yeah, another example of linoleum floor tile. And this is the type of material. This is pipe insulation. And in pipe insulation, pipe wrap, this might be a material that might have more than that normal, you know, 2 to 5% asbestos content. This is what looks to be a highly, you know, a very friable product. Looks like just a little bit of air movement could disturb that material. So this is something to watch out for, something that, you know, if we were doing a survey, we would need our PPE on surrounding this. This is probably something, Philip, correct me if I'm wrong, you would probably just not test this. You would probably.
Unfortunately, with this, I would still have to test because, again, you know, just looking at something like this, the only thing that I have ever assumed to be asbestos would be those transite siding. I have sampled material like that that did not come out to be asbestos, even though it looks terrible. And one important thing, anytime you're sampling asbestos, if it's already damaged, like this is damaged already, it's not wrapped correctly. Okay, this is something very dangerous that we would have to take precaution on, especially on how we sampled it and where it sat, and do we contain the area? Do we keep this away from the general public, etc.? Because it's already damaged, so it's already peeling off, it's already flaking off, and literally, I bet if I touch that, it'll crumple up and become fibrous. But at the end of the day, Ben, absolutely, I'm going to have to sample this. I can't assume on this because pipe insulation is one thing that you can't assume on because sometimes it just comes back that it's not asbestos.
It's true.
Yep.
The only one, like if I saw something like this and it's not that type of insulation, but let's say it's the pink insulation or the yellow insulation. So I know that that insulation is not going to have asbestos. But what is going to contain asbestos or what potentially could contain asbestos is going to be the wrap. So the wrap that actually holds that insulation in place, as well as the mastic that they use on that wrap. Mm-hmm. Those are what potentially could come up with asbestos. But this material that we're looking at right here, definitely that insulation could come up with asbestos.
Cool. Great, great explanations. And thank you guys for taking the time to do that. I'm just going to look back through. I don't see a whole lot of questions coming in from our viewers out there, but usually what that tells me is that our experts that we have on are doing an amazing job of explaining and just touching on all the topics that, you know, are of interest in, and you're probably answering a lot of questions before they even come in. So the detail that you guys went into and the stories you guys share are just invaluable. So really appreciate that. Thank you. Before we end here, do you have any final thoughts you guys would like to leave our viewers with just as we close here? And then Ben, why don't you go into the asbestos services that Mold Inspection Sciences offers and how they can get a hold of us if they need to.
Absolutely.
Why don't you start?
Yeah, so I'll first say it's been a pleasure being on the show, gathering kind of everything up that Philip and I have said. Mold Inspection Sciences can assist you with your asbestos needs for everything outside of physically removing that asbestos itself, from starting to the initial surveys all the way up to performing clearance assessments and testing and monitoring abatement projects. Again, we can help you monitor and manage asbestos-containing material if you do have it present, if it's identified in your surveys. So if you do have any asbestos concerns, if you're a contractor, homeowner, if you're planning to disturb materials, undergo any renovations or demolition, please give us a call. You can visit our website, moldinspectiontexas.com. Look for other resources, contact information, and you can reach us on by phone at 888-335-MOLD. That's 888-335-6653.
Awesome.
Yeah, and also, especially homeowners, commercial properties will always call us because they have to. But homeowners, if your home is old, if you have an old home, and when I say an old home, I mean anything that literally was built before 1980, okay? If you have anything built before 1980 and you are deciding to cut into walls, if you look up and you see popcorn ceiling texture, it's this texture that literally looks like popcorn. If you go into your attic and you see these funky looking insulation that's not your pink insulation, your yellow insulation, but it's blown in insulation that's a grayish color, look like pebbles. I mean, if you see any type of texture on your wall, even if you see floor tiles that look old, hey, don't be a hero, okay? Call us so we can at least sample it, so we can at least tell you it's not asbestos. Once we tell you that, then do what you want to. But know that older homes could potentially have asbestos. So if you hire your general contractor and he's there cutting into your walls, and then you find out 20, 30 years later that he has some type of mesothelioma, hey, he might have got it from your house. So be careful, be cautious. Older homes, give us a call.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Guys, it's been fun hanging out with you on this special Texas Takeover edition of the Secret Life of Mold podcast. And remember, you guys can always reach out to us on Facebook or through our website at moldinspectiontexas.com. Thank you guys for giving us that in-depth view of the asbestos world. And we'll look forward to seeing you guys all back here soon on another edition of the Secret Life of Mold podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
Thank you for joining me today for this episode of the Secret Life of Mold podcast. If you need help with mold issues in your home or office, we'd love to help. For our Texas location, please call 888-335-MOLD. That's 888-335-6653. Or email contact@moldtx.com. For our locations other than Texas, reach out to our customer care team at 800-619-MOLD. That's 800-619-6653. Or email us at contact@moldsci.com.
All information, content, and material on our podcast and on our websites is for informational purposes only and is not intended to serve as a substitute for the consultation, diagnosis, and/or medical treatment of a qualified physician or healthcare provider. We survey and test for asbestos in structures and materials, not in humans. If you suspect asbestos-related health issues, please contact your medical provider for diagnosis and advice.